Welcome to the latest episode of Grizzly Bear Blues Live. My name is Sean Coleman. Hope wherever you are and wherever you are listening, you are having a great start, you know, great end to your Thursday, great start to your Friday. And you know, it's crazy. I am so thrilled about the fact that it's been more than a year, but I am thrilled to welcome a guest that I've been waiting to talk with for quite a while since we last talked on Locked On Grizzlies, but it actually is the first original host of Grizzly Bear Blues Live and current Locked On Grizzlies host, Mr. Joe Mullinax. Joe, it has been a while. I hope you're well. How are you, sir?
I am well. My old friend Sean Coleman, it's great to be back on with you. Great to be back on GBB Live. You know, I passed it on to Parker Fleming, our mutual good friend, and he's passed it on to you, and you're doing a wonderful job with it. I love listening to the show, and I really enjoy the angles that you take and the way that you've made it your own. And that's the way it's supposed to be, right? When I started GBB Live, the 10-year anniversary of GBB Live is coming up. I don't know if you knew that or not, Sean. I started it back in 2014. You know, the whole purpose is to take something and make it better and, you know, build upon it. And you're most certainly doing that. So thank you for having me on. I'm excited to be here, and I'm very happy that it isn't the very capable hands of my good friend, Sean Coleman.
Yes, and Joe has been a good friend for a while. And obviously, you know, for those who are listening into the show, one of the best sources of content is Joe Mullinax, obviously, with good mutual friend as well, DeMichael Cole, doing an excellent job over at Locked On Grizzlies. So make sure that you enjoy them as much as possible. Now, Joe, I'm glad that, you know, I was looking forward to talk with you. You know, always a pleasure to catch up with you, but I'm going to be honest with you. It's not the best of circumstances when it comes to talking about the Memphis Grizzlies. We're 2 weeks in, 1-7. Listen, I'll just get right to it. You know, this team is supposed to be better than they are. I think they are better than they're playing right now, but film, numbers, everything indicates that it's pretty legitimate that they're 1-7. It's frustrating that they are, but there are reasons why we definitely are not playing winning basketball like we'd like to. Now, I know that you like to coin the phrase, call me at Christmas, far too early to sit here and determine what the end result of this season will be. So I'll put it to you this way. Couple of two-week takeaways that you have when it comes to this team. We're not where we want to be. We want to get better. But what are a couple of two-week takeaways you have?
One of my takeaways is, you know, when Zach Kleiman said, do we really need to quadruple down on depth, the Grizzlies GM, it was kind of a Freudian slip, because it's almost like it's something that keeps him awake at night. They just don't have enough current NBA players, right? Like, whether it's the Steven Adams injury that it's hard to believe it caught them by surprise, but apparently it did, and they weren't really prepared for it. Whether it was the Adams injury, obviously Jaw's suspension, various players, Santi Aldama, Luke Kennard, John Conchar, now Zaire Williams being in and out of the injury report. I think that you're just seeing that they've chosen to go with younger players as opposed to bringing in veterans or keeping veterans like Kyle Anderson and DeAnthony Melton, and they're paying the price for that, to be honest with you. Like, DeAnthony Melton is a good reserve for one of the best teams in the NBA, the Philadelphia 76ers. Kyle Anderson is a good reserve for one of the best teams currently in the NBA, the Minnesota Timberwolves. And here are the Grizzlies, who could have had Melton, who could have had Anderson, who could have had Walker Kessler, who obviously is injured now, but he theoretically could be a member of this roster. How nice would it be to have that guy as a Steven Adams replacement? And instead, you have three first-round wings and combo forwards that got outplayed by a guy who was the Division II Player of the Year several years ago in Haywood Highsmith, coming out of Wheeling Jesuit or whatever the name of the damn school is. So they are just not particularly good in terms of the players that have to be able to step up. I think Desmond Bane is doing all that he can. It wasn't good enough against the Miami Heat, but he's still doing the best that he can. I think Marcus Smart is doing the best that he can, playing out of position. He should not be a true point guard, but they don't have anybody else. Derrick Rose is week to week. The injury issues are significant. Jaren Jackson Jr. doing pretty much all that he can. There's just not enough beyond those guys for them to legitimately be considered a good NBA team right now.
I agree. I think that that's a good way to put it. And you know this. So we'll get right to you know when you going a bit further into when you say that we don't have you know enough NBA players. You know I consider
right.
the NBA you know players the valuable NBA players on this roster right now are Jaren, Bain, Marcus Smart, Kennard, Santi, X. Who am I missing? Mm-hmm. Bismack Biyombo, you know, that's seven.
But even Bismack Biyombo was unemployed this time last week.
Fair enough. Hey, we're going to go with anything that we can that's a positive. He's looked like an NBA player the past two games.
Sure, that's entirely fair.
But I think to your point, it's not only the fact that we have seven NBA players. Many of those are probably not starters. You have three legitimate starters, I think, right now when it comes to the Grizzlies. Smart, Bane, Jaren. But it's not only the fact that you're limited on NBA players, you have no NBA players right now in the spot on the roster that really is what is being featured in the NBA right now. And that's the wing. We've really got hardly any value out of Zaire or you know, Roddy or Jake LaRavia. The numbers for Roddy and Zaire are, at times they look okay. But in general, when it comes to impact, there's just been very little positive impact. So, sure. Joe, from what you've seen so far, I don't want to put too much emphasis on an 8-game sample size, but when you look at the past as well, do you feel that one of those three are going to be an NBA player anytime soon? Or at this point in time, are we just managing the fact that the young group of wings we were hoping would develop, it may just take longer than any of us had anticipated? And it may not happen.
I do think it's important to point out that every player develops at a different rate. Right. And you don't want to chalk up anybody as a bust, especially the 2022 draft class that has literally only been a part of the organization, what, 18 months, even less than that. So you don't want to overreact. But this is where, for me personally, Sean, at the feet of Zach Kleiman lay the biggest issues with where the Grizzlies currently are. Because instead of being a team that is a contender right now, they are among the worst in the NBA alongside the Washington Wizards. You know, if we're at this stage this time next month, you and I are going to have to start doing NBA draft lottery breakdowns and previews in terms of are the Grizzlies going to be picking in the freaking lottery. That there's just a lot that this team is not capable of doing. And it has to start with the guy who made the decision to not stick with DeAnthony Melton, the guy who made the decision to draft Jake LaRavia, to draft David Roddy, to go and draft Kennedy Chandler and sign him to one of the largest second round pick contracts in the history of the National Basketball Association. The Memphis Grizzlies are currently paying Kennedy Chandler to not play basketball for them. So Vince Williams, two-way contract guy, Kenneth Lofton Jr. on the roster, but you have gotten very little from that draft class. And you mentioned Zaire Williams, still young, but he has been given every opportunity to be the guy, and he hasn't been able to do it. He has one of the worst plus-minus numbers on the team. So are they NBA players on bad teams? Like Grizzlies are currently a bad team. I think David Roddy is an NBA player. I think that Zaire Williams is an NBA player. But these guys don't have trade value. When you get so specific in terms of what you're looking for, and Sean, you've cracked the code, right? Like a few years ago, you predicted the Memphis Grizzlies draft class, for goodness sake. So you know exactly what they're looking for. But the issue is when you get so specific and you pass over guys that other teams covet because you think you're smarter than everyone else in the room, and in fairness to Zach Kleiman, numerous times he has been smarter than almost everybody else in the room. Sometimes that bites you in the butt. Like even if Memphis wanted to go out and take advantage of the Chicago Bulls potentially tanking later on as their season goes awry, DeMar DeRozan's there. Zach LaVine's there. What is Memphis trading for those guys? They don't have anybody of value. So they're in the awkward, uncomfortable position of having to hope that these wings are going to come along and get to a place where they can produce for a contending team. And, you know, I know we're trying to be positive on this GBB Live, Sean, but that just feels really unlikely at this time. we don't have a ton of visual evidence to back up that hope.
Yeah, it's a situation in which just, you know, to be honest, you don't want to read too much into 2 weeks of play. You don't want to read much into an 8-game sample, but it's also hard to sit here and just completely ignore the fact of how much is there to show that we just are not performing to the level that we need to perform. And we'll go into that a little bit, Joe. You know, I agree with you. You don't want to write off Zaire, Roddy, or Laravia. But at this point, I also feel that you're just to the point to where, yes, you want them to develop. Yes, they need reps, but you've got to get some wins. It's easier to develop in a winning environment than it is in an environment where you're constantly losing. So at some point, something has to improve. Something has to be put in a better position. And this is a team, I talked about it, Parker talked about it. I know you've talked about it as well. This is a team structured to be a defensive first team. They're coming off a season in which they have the defensive player of the year. They got Marcus Smart. They're supposed to be a defensive team. If we're talking about a way for this team to start to get better, an area where they can start performing at a level that they can win games, do you see it being the defense? Do you see it being the offense? Do you see it being health finally going our way? What to you about this team could be the avenue to improvement that can help them be in a position soon to win some games?
They're still playing relatively, I don't want to say good defense, but by the numbers, Sean, and you're the stats guy, they're an average defense in the NBA right now. Is that fair to say? Sure. They're roughly average. You're more of a numbers guy than me, but I do know this. They're currently ranked 30th offensively. And I think on our most recent episode of Locked On Grizzlies, my partner, DeMichael Cole, of the Commercial Appeal, he brought up the fact that the average points per game being scored in the NBA this season so far is something like 113 and 114 points. The Grizzlies have done that like one time in the entire season, if that. Like, they just can't get anywhere near what an average NBA offense does. So I think that while defense travels and while defense can be good every game, it's a lot more about effort and execution. Sometimes the shot just doesn't fall into the net on the offensive end. They have to find ways, whether it's protecting possessions better in terms of turnovers or rush shots. You know, Marcus Smart really struggles with that. Whether it's getting out in transition more, whether it's Bismack Biyombo as an offensive rebounder, really doing his best Steven Adams impression. They have to get more possessions and they have to score the basketball. Otherwise, it doesn't matter how good of defense they play. If they can't score 113 points every other night, they are not going to win a vast majority of their games, because that is the average starting point for an NBA offense. And the Grizzlies are almost 10 points below that mark right now. It's not acceptable. It has to get better.
Yeah, I mean, against Miami, you have a game that, you know, it kind of, for this Grizzlies team, goes with their flow. But they had 90 shots on the night, 13 more than the Miami Heat, and they still were not able to get the job done. And so let's also kind of look at, Joe, you may have made the comment, somebody made the comment, and this reminds me of kind of your way of thinking a lot of times, is that, you know, when it's not going good for the team, when you're going through a stretch of, you know, negative play, the fault lies everywhere, right? You know, you can sit here and, you know, cast blame for however much you want to, but it is a collective effort of, I don't want to say failure, but struggles. When it comes to Taylor Jenkins, I definitely think that the responsibility does fall on him a bit. But last night, I thought it was a perfect microcosm of kind of where we stand. I know a lot of people want to, you know, blame Taylor Jenkins' defensive schemes for leading to that shot by Jaime Jaquez that led to, you know, that late three to give the Heat a 6-point lead. But the instance that Taylor Jenkins called, the trapping aspect of the defense, that's what got him back in the game. That's what they went with to try to be aggressive. And for this team, you're going to go with whatever works right now. Unfortunately, though, it was a bad recovery rotation by Santi Aldama. Where do you kind of stand on, yes, Taylor Jenkins definitely deserves some of the blame. I think that some things need to change up. But where are you on, is it more execution? Is it more implementation of the plan? Or is it kind of 50-50 right now?
I'm going to cop out and say it's everybody, but I will give you a little bit more meat on the Jenkins bone. I don't want to start a flame war on GBB Live. I hesitate to bring politics into this. Regardless of your political leanings, to me, blaming Taylor Jenkins for this and saying it's his fault is like blaming the president of the United States, regardless of political party, Donald Trump, Joe Biden, whoever you want is, whoever it is, blaming them for gas prices, right? It's their fault that gas prices are high. Well, no, you idiot. It's not just their fault. There's lots of factors at play that lead to that being a potential problem. Are presidential policies something that contribute to that? Yeah. But there's also a lot of things outside of the control and within the control of the government beyond the president that all add up to whatever that number is on the gas pump. It's a similar concept here, at least to me. Taylor Jenkins needs to evolve his defensive alignments. I don't understand why that's such a challenge for him. He's just Mike Budenholzer's protege and stubborn in that way. They don't need to be over helping, especially when there's not even any dribble penetration. That's the one that makes me the most mad. At least if they're over helping on someone who has a lane to the rim, you can make an argument for that. There's times where they over help just on passes. A guy is standing in a triple threat position and they overextend themselves and they put the defense in a really tough spot. That has been a consistent issue. So there's things to point out with Jenkins that are concerning, frustrating, whatever the case might be. But at some point, Desmond Bane and Marcus Smart have to shoot better than 8 of 30 from the floor. At some point, you need a wing that isn't named John Conchar to be able to produce not just rebounds, but also score the basketball. At some point, you need to have a roster that is healthy. It's difficult to criticize a medical staff, but we're 2 weeks into the season, and like DeMichael Cole has said on X, you know, the damn injury report reads like the Declaration of Independence, like one of our founding documents. It's so long. So where does the blame fall for that? There's so much that goes into an underachieving playing group like this. Jenkins has a hand in that, but to scapegoat him, in my opinion, is lazy. It goes beyond just his own flaws as a coach. There's multiple layers to this.
Absolutely. And you know, again, I think the thing that stands out to me is that right now what Jenkins is running into is that I think that his past proves there's no doubt he can make effective adjustments. It just takes him time at times. But right now, they just don't have time. You know, you mentioned Parker Fleming. Parker Fleming said it before the start of the season. There's a chance the Grizzlies can be fine, but they have a very small margin of error. And right now, they're just making too many errors. And that's really what is getting, you know, in the way of them being able to have success. But, you know, the defense, we talk about it a lot because that is where the Grizzlies can be elite. But to your point, they got to be better offensively. Nothing is going to happen for them if they're constantly starting off the first quarter, not even giving the double digits until 6-7 minutes into the game. So it was something that's been out there, you know, Grizz Twitter. I think that I was a little bit reluctant to it because I love Luke Kennard off the bench with what he brings, with how you can insert him. But they need to get off to better starts. And without a doubt, Luke Kennard is one of their better offensive players. Joe, where do you stand on the potential idea of Luke Kennard starting and just overall the approach of this team, the heavy approach when it comes to threes right now? Do you adjust the focus on threes? Do you keep it with Kennard in the lineup? How does that combination work out for you?
I love it. I think it's a great idea. I think that you have to do something to start faster. And Zaire Williams just isn't giving it to you right now. So you bring in Luke Kennard as that starter. You bring in Zaire as an early sub. You find ways to work through the rotation to get one of Smart or Bane on the floor at all times to help coordinate the offense. There has to be some sort of shakeup. And I don't think it's Bismack Biyombo, because he is the guy that allows for Jaren Jackson Jr. to be one of the only Grizzlies players that is capable of playing within the role and position that he is supposed to be at, right? So to me, it's Zaire that gets pulled out. It's Kennard who goes in. He can be an early sub and still play a majority of his minutes with the reserves. But you have to respect Luke Kennard offensively. You do not have to respect Zaire Williams offensively right now. And one of the beauties of this is if you believe in Biyombo as that Adams impersonator, he can be the guy who impacts winning without having to score, and you create even more room thanks to Kennard's gravity. I hate using that term, but it's relevant here. More space to operate. It should make Desmond Bane and Marcus Smart's lives easier off the dribble. To me, it's a no-brainer. I would go Kennard over Williams starting against the Jazz.
And then when it comes to, you know, the fact that right now we're unfortunately without Xavier Tillman and John Conchar, you know, I know that this team right now, you want those wings to work out, especially Laravia and Zaire, because of the size that they offer, the size and the length, because the rest of the roster right now, it's pretty small for sure. But the point that I'm getting at is that if you start Kennard in the starting lineup, my concern is then you've got Santi, you've got Roddy, you've got Zaire. You don't have just a ton of offense. It's probably going to be staggering minutes that's going to lead to that offense. But what are your thoughts about the bench? The bench has been playing a little bit better, but a lot of that's had to do with Kennard coming off the bench. If you start Kennard, what do you do about those bench minutes to hopefully keep the offense as consistent as possible?
I think you can stagger them. I think your first subs can be Santi Aldama in for Biombo, and you can have Kennard come out and Williams go back in, and that offsets some of that a little bit. And you, again, you can't manufacture a clone of the guys that they're missing and put them out there and say, all right, everything's fixed. These aren't great solutions. You're trying to find fixes and ways to plug leaks, basically. It's short-term solutions, short-term fixes. For me, you have two relevant reserve scorers when everybody's healthy in Kennard and Aldama. One of them needs to be a starter to help the current state of affairs for the offense. It makes more sense to slide Kennard into that role. And like I said, your first two subs can be Williams or whoever, whatever wing, because I don't think Zaire necessarily earned it or deserves it. Whatever wing for Kennard. And then Aldama for Biombo. And that's your way of making sure, you know, Kennard can come in and be the first sub for Bane or Smart, whatever the case might be. And it allows for you to maintain that balance of offense as best you can while acknowledging that the starting unit, you know, it's too easy to limit Desmond Bane right now. He's the only guy that you really have to fear on the perimeter. With Kennard out there, it's not that simple. It would make Bane, who's your best offensive player, regardless of what Kennard does, it would make his life a little bit simpler, and I'm all for doing that because Dez is playing his ass off, and you know he's not good enough to be the focal point of an opposing defense. If that happens, he's going to have nights like he did against the Miami Heat. You have to give him something to work with, and I think Kennard brings that more than Williams. And again, you can offset some of what you lose by the way that you rotate guys in and out.
So, Joe, again, I referenced it earlier. You know, you have been, you know, kind of, you know, your moniker is Call Me at Christmas. I think that is a very fair, you know, and you know, valid way of looking at the season. You know, you can always make up for, you know, the last two thirds of the season, what happened in the first third. You now changed it to, I guess, Melia on MLK Day. I think that's what it's called. I
Give
don't
me
know.
a ri give me a ring on the day for Dr. King.
There you go. There you go. That's a good way of putting it. But this schedule coming up, you know, we've got the Jazz, you know, on Friday night, and then after that, we're going to have the Clippers on Sunday, as well as the Lakers on Tuesday, and then after that, we've got a 3-day. It's kind of an odd part of the schedule. We've got that 3-day window there where we're going to be off. And tomorrow night, obviously, is the second game of the in-season tournament. Then after that, the Spurs and the Celtics. You've got to get multiple wins in this stretch because, again, I don't want to write this team off a month into the season. But at some point, if you get close to being 10 games under 500 and you haven't even played 20 games in the season, it gets a bit, you know, too big of a hole. Kind of what are your thoughts on what at what point in the season, if things continue on as they are you kind of like, okay, this just now is getting to the point to where it's getting concerning. This hole may be too big. Where is that for you?
Dr. King Day, and it's not just me being facetious, that is where it'll be around that time because they'll play, you know, 40 to 50 games or around that stretch. I think it's probably closer to 40 because Ja Morant comes back around Christmas, right? So say they play another 15 games before that. You're right at the halfway point of the season, just about. And I think that you decide if you're a buyer or a seller, right? You decide if you want to go out and try to get a wing and invest some more draft capital in that pursuit. Or if you decide between the injuries and Jaws suspension, it's just not in the cards this year, and you want to try to get out, you know, maybe you trade Luke Kennard. He might have the value of a protected first round pick because of what he does as a 3-point shooter, depending on the buyer. It's unlikely, but it's possible. Maybe somebody wants to take a swing on a Ziaire Williams or a David Roddy or one of these other guys, and you decide to get that excess draft capital as opposed to trying to hold on to something that just simply isn't there. It's a Dr. King day for me because, again, you'll have 10 to 12 games of Ja and what Ja looks like. Because if Ja Morant doesn't come back as a top 15 player in the NBA, this is all moot, right? Like, none of it matters. They're going to be bad without Ja regardless. They don't have somebody like Tyus Jones. They brought in Marcus Smart for the playoffs. And, you know, by Martin Luther King Day, if they're 10 games under 500, to use your number, it's probably time to start being realistic about what your season expectations are. In the short term, I think that this Utah Jazz game is about as close to a must win as you can get in the middle of November because of the schedule getting tougher. Like the Clippers, you know, you're lucky you're catching them early when they're still trying to figure out the James Harden situation. The Lakers embarrassed the Grizzlies in the playoffs. You should never expect to be able to beat up on the Lakers. The Spurs are bad theoretically, but Victor Wembanyama is a player the likes of which we've never seen in the NBA. And the second game of the back-to-back after the Spurs is the Boston Celtics, who look like them and the Philadelphia 76ers might be the favorites to get out of the Eastern Conference and perhaps win the whole damn thing. So the schedule is going to get a lot harder. The Utah Jazz are the ones that are dealing with injuries to players like Walker Kessler. They're the ones who there's already reports of what tanking might look like for them if they decide to go that route. The Jazz are not bad, but they're also not actively trying to be good. The Grizzlies are bad, but they are actively trying to be good, and it's a home game. It just really feels like one of those moments where they have to put their foot down and try to stop the bleeding. Long term, it's a couple more months for me before I, you know, fully write off the season. But in the short term, if they lose to Utah, you know, losing to the Clippers and the Lakers wouldn't be surprising in the least bit. And that would put you at 1-10, which would be a pretty rough spot to be in.
Here with Joe Molnax, former host of Grizzly Bear Blues Live, Locked on Grizzlies as well. Finishing up, you know, this conversation with him about the, you know, early season struggles of the Grizzlies. And let's shift the focus, Joe, to a bit more of a positive takeaway. And you know, you talk about, you know, you're really not going to jump to any or come to any, you know, just, you know, absolute conclusions on the season until Martin Luther King Day. But I think that one thing that should not be lost on how much the Grizzlies have struggled so far this year is the fact that we're seeing a new level of sustainability offensively for Jaren Jackson Jr. and Desmond Bane. And that is a wonderful turn of events for this team. Because at the end of the day, what happens regardless of this season, you're still going to have three of the top 50 players in the NBA locked up long term as your core. And that's a good position to be in. So while you do have the start of the season that we're experiencing, how is that impacting that core long-term? I have to feel more encouraged with how they played, especially with the offensive progression of Jaren Jackson Jr.
Despite the stupidity of their ranking of Tyrese Halliburton in front of Ja Morant, the ESPN 25 players under 25 years old, the Grizzlies are the only team that have two guys on that list. Ja at 5, which again is dumb. It should be 4. And Jaren Jackson Jr. at 10. So the future remains bright, even despite the current darkness. And I do think, and I loved your piece over at Bluff City Media, by the way, Sean, writing about the evolution of Jaren Jackson Jr. It was really well done. He's showing new ways to score. You and I have talked in the past, and it's been one of my things that I've focused so much on with him. He's doing really well as a passer right now, putting up career numbers in terms of assist percentage, finding other guys off the dribble. You could game plan for him in the past, Sean, and say he's not going to pass it once he gets down. Once he starts his movement towards the basket, he's not going to dish. He's not going to pass. You can collapse on him. I don't know that you can do that anymore. It's a small sample size of 8 games, but I've seen enough that if I was an opposing coach, I would say, hey, yeah, he still likes to drive and try to finish at the rim, but we are seeing growth from him as a passer. He might dish out and kick. We might have to leave some open threes. That is growth in and of itself. So whether it's his passing, his creation off the dribble, he's being asked to do more as a complete basketball player, which is impacting his defensive stats some. But he had such a remarkable block season last year that it was always going to be difficult to replicate that. So to see him be a more complete player, I think Desmond Bane has been better to this point in the season, but Jaren is a close 1B. To see him go head-to-head with Bam Adebayo, one of the NBA's best bigs, to see that matchup be almost even, I think it's fair to say Bam won, but it certainly wasn't a blowout victory for Adebayo. Jaren is a guy that is continuing to develop and grow, not just as a person, but also as a player. And that's going to pay dividends. Again, one of the reasons I'm not concerned is I need to see this team as healthy as possible. I need to see this team with Ja Morant. Because if the Grizzlies make the playoffs as the 7-6-5 seed and they're healthy and Marcus Smart is able to play off the ball as opposed to on it, and Jaren Jackson Jr. is able to continue to do what he's doing, and Desmond Bane has his usage rate go down a little bit because Morant is there, I still think there's a good basketball team underneath all of this, and Jaren's going to be a major reason for that.
Agreed completely. And that's why at the end of the day, when it comes to this slow start, when it comes to the struggles that we're seeing, I think just a couple of wins could really help us out. And I definitely think, you know, the future remains bright for certain. Joe, one last question, you know, while we have you here, there's been a lot of excitement around the NBA. For instance, did you know this, Joe? I'm going to tell you this, and I'm so glad that I get to tell you this talking with you on GBB Live. Did you know that right now, a certain reserve for the Milwaukee Bucks is posting the highest true shooting percentage of his career? His name is Jay Crowder.
Oh, no.
The resurgence of Jay Crowder is happening this year, Joe.
It's so not.
We'll set that to the side in terms of things that you're most excited about. But listen, we've got a lot of young talent. Wemby Mania is finally here in the NBA. Let's expand it a little bit. You know, we've got some things that we're waiting to get good for the Grizzlies. But in terms of the NBA in general, just two or three takeaways that you have from the early start of the season that's kind of making you excited about the fact that we've got all this young talent and a lot going on with the start of the NBA season.
I love watching Wembanyama. I think he's fascinating. Yeah, he's a 6 inches taller Kevin Durant in a lot of ways. It's like Slender Man playing basketball. It's horrifying. It's haunting. It's weird to say that about someone playing a game like basketball, but it has like a Thanos vibe. Like he's inevitable. Like what the hell do you do against a guy like that?
Slender Man was a Halloween costume. It was the perfect Halloween costume for him.
Like he's just horrifying in terms of once he figures it out, because obviously he hasn't figured it out yet. Once he figures it out at the NBA level, I don't think you stop him. I don't think it's possible. And he'll probably be, you know, since Wilt Chamberlain, the first guy, and it's 2023, 2024, where everybody's just like, ah, screw it. You know, just, he's going to score 50 points. Try to stop everybody else. It is going to be really interesting to watch him grow and develop in the years to come. I've really liked watching the young players in Orlando. I think the Magic have built it up in an interesting fashion, same way with the Thunder. I think that those are two teams that maybe are still a year or so away, but once they do arrive, it's going to be Memphis Grizzlies-esque, you know, second, third seed in their conference. I think that there's a lot of potential within those young teams. You know, Chet Holmgren is very lean and very thin, but he does a lot of things that are pretty constructive that are going to help OKC a ton down the road. And I also enjoy, you know, I know I just kind of trashed him a little bit, but, you know, Tyrese Halliburton is a really fun player to watch in Indiana. You know, I read a comp on X the other day, and I talked with DeMichael about it on Lockdown Grizzlies. He agreed with me. Steve Nash. You know, I see a lot of Steve Nash and Tyrese Halliburton just being a pure, complete playmaker and creator of offense for others. So the NBA, in terms of talent, is in really good hands with the youth. And all of this is without, arguably, one of their most talented homegrown American talents in Ja Morant being on the floor to start this season. So if Ja is able to come back and be productive and be a functioning member of society in terms of, you know, his interactions with the league and what they expect from a superstar of his caliber, if he can do all those things, it's only going to add to the excitement and it's only going to make the NBA more impactful in terms of how its youth is helping grow and develop the game.
Makes you feel bad that you age each and every year, at least on my end, because hey, the game's getting younger, getting more exciting. And you're like, man, I just want to go back to my 20s and enjoy it. But for those who have followed, you know, Joe's work for a while, you know how awesome he is, how passionate he is about the Grizzlies. You know, hey, he's here for a take that may not everybody may not agree with. But the thing is that it's always well thought out, constructed, and he's one of the best when it comes to covering the Grizzlies. I've been very, very blessed to call him a good friend, as well as, you know, a fellow, you know, Memphis media member for years now. But Joe, you know, we do our work, you know, as columnists over at Bluff City Media. Just where can people find your work and anything that you may have coming up in the next days and weeks?
I'm over at Bluff City Media with you, and I really enjoy the work that we do over there. I like writing. It's something I still get a kick out of after all these years. I've been doing it for 10 years now, going on 11 years as a writer covering these Grizzlies. And, you know, I'm not tired of it yet. You know, I still really enjoy it. And, you know, I'm going to kind of take a dive in the next day or two into, you know, why the Grizzlies are struggling, how much of the blame should go to Taylor Jenkins. You know, the blame game is kind of a lazy thing to do. I'm going to try to play with that angle a little bit, but I'll keep writing over at Bluff City Media. Check out my work there. Locked On Grizzlies each and every day, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Sean, an alum of Locked On Grizzlies, happy to be doing the gig with DeMichael now. And, you know, I just am fortunate to still be able to do this, right? I miss Memphis even to this day. And this is a wonderful way for me to stay connected to the city that I care a lot about and the team that I care a lot about that helped me fall in love with the city. You know, I'm going to keep doing it until the wheels fall off, and maybe we're closer to that than I would like, but you know, I still enjoy it. Still like following the team and covering it. And you're right. I'm pretty good at pissing people off with my takes, but you know, I do my best to come from some sort of logical place, unless it involves the NBA Cup, in which case it's just not logical at all. I just hate it. and it's an illogical hate. I'm willing to acknowledge that.
I imagine 24 hours from now, you're going to be falling in love with the Grizzlies court like
everybody. NBA Cup, NBA.
But his name is Joe Mullinax. You know, we've name dropped a few other people. This is what's awesome about Grizzlies coverage is that, you know, there's great talents, there's great insight, but there's also good people who you know, you're lucky to be a part of it. You know, if you've experienced it, you know, good people that have become good friends to Michael Parker, many others. But again, you can find Joe's work over at Bluff City Media. Always a wonderful column when he writes it. Great insight, just excellent content. Obviously, he delivers every single day at Locked On Grizzlies, and he's been kind enough to join me here. Joe, as always, it's a pleasure if you'll stick with us for just a few moments after, but always a pleasure to talk with you, sir. I hope you have a good start to your weekend.
Thank you, Sean. I appreciate you, buddy. Enjoy that family, that beautiful baby you got, that wonderful wife of yours. Enjoy it. Keep living it up, and thrilled to still be working with you, my friend.
Same here, Joe. For Joe Mullinax, who you can find at Joe Mullinax on Twitter, X, whatever you call it. My name's Sean Coleman. You can find me at StatsSEC. Find all the great work at GBB Live, BluffCityMedia.co, as well as Bluff City Media, BluffCity_media on Twitter. And then obviously at BCM Grizzlies. You can find all the great content there and on the BCM Grizzlies podcast network. For Joe Mullinax, my name's Sean Coleman. We'll talk to you again soon here on GBB Live.